He thinks it will make me a better actress if I understand what Cora is trying to do. I nodded like I understood. But in reality, her statement confused me. After all, how hard was it to point a wand and deliver the right spell names on cue? Surely if humans could make magic behind the scenes, then paranormals could too. No one really thought that Evangeline was doing all the magic her character was portrayed as doing on the show. Did they? Evangeline sighed. It's not really going all that well. No? I flipped open the handbook and got to the page that contained the recipe for my first batch of the night, the ever-popular Perky Potion. Why not?
I don't feel like I'm making much progress.
Well, I'm sure you'll figure it out. I crossed the kitchen, lit a fire under the kettle on the stove with a flick of my hand, and then wiggled my fingers at the radio sitting near the deep two-basin sink to kick on some tunes. I like to work with music. Hope that's all right.
Of course.
Evangeline held up her hands.
I'm just here to observe.
Thanks. She inclined her head and then dropped her hands, palms down on the counter. I studied her for a long moment. Everything about her was Hollywood perfection. Her sleek raven hair fell nearly to her waist and never looked tangled or frizzy. She usually wore it in a braid, tossed casually over one shoulder. Tonight she had it braided, with three strands of purple ribbon woven into the intricate design, giving her an even more exotic flair. Her skin was a light mocha color, which made her sapphire blue eyes pop all the more. Generally, I wasn't an insecure person, but staring at Evangeline made it hard, if not impossible, not to compare and find flaws with myself. I pushed aside the thoughts and went to work. I had a lot of potions to whip up and couldn't afford to waste time wishing for impossible things. At first, I was hyper-aware that I was being watched and nervously began to narrate everything I did. It was a little like hosting a cooking show on TV, except I was cutting up worms instead of whipping up gourmet delicacies. Evangeline honored her side of the deal, and while she listened intently, she didn't ask any questions. After a few minutes, I got lost in the work itself and hummed along with the radio as though I were alone in the kitchen. When I had the first potion brewing, I leaned against the counter, stirring the contents every few minutes, and turned my attention back to Evangeline.
"I notice you don't refer to the handbook all that often," she commented, sensing an opportunity to interject.
I nodded, glancing at the old book that was open before me on the counter. Absently, I ran a finger down the pages. It was more of a comfort thing, having it near while I worked. "Most of the potions I make are of my own invention and kind of live in my head these days. My Aunt Bethany taught me almost everything I know about potion making. She's a genius."
"Where does she live?"
"In the New York Haven. She married an SPA bigwig and moved out there after I turned 19. I haven't seen her for years." Evangeline frowned.
"That's too bad. What about your parents? Do they live nearby?"
A familiar jolt of pain ripped through me. I shook my head and flipped a few pages, though I wasn't focused on the words or images. No, actually, I lost both of my parents." Evangeline covered her mouth, masking a gasp. She quickly dropped it and shook her head.
"Holly, I'm so sorry. I had no idea."
"It's okay." I met her gaze and tried to smile, but it felt strangled. "It was a long time ago. Like that meant anything. The pain was just as real and raw as it had been the day the team of SPA agents had shown up to deliver the horrific news." I tugged the elastic band from my hair and readjusted my ponytail, still keeping my gaze off of Evangeline. I didn't want to see the pity in her eyes. I knew the expression well. "What about you? Do your parents live in L.A.?"
"No, they ended up moving abroad after I left home. We see each other a few times a year when my schedule allows for it."
The perky potion started bubbling, and I was grateful for the distraction. I plunged back into my work, abandoning the somber conversation. When the final potion,
the faded flirt, was simmering nicely, I cleaned up my workstation and prepared to call it a night. "Adam wasn't kidding," she said, smiling up at me, a cat-like quality shimmering in her eyes.
"What do you mean?"
Evangeline laughed softly, the sound like a tinkling wind chime in a summer breeze. "He told me you were a prodigy."
"Adam said that?"
I arched a brow as a smile tugged at the corner of my lips. She smiled too, and tapped her long nails on the counter. They were painted a glossy onyx black. "He talks about you endlessly."
"He does?"
My heart twisted in my chest, as a flash of guilt hit me in the stomach like a boxer's glove. Here I'd been worried about Adam having second thoughts about choosing me over Evangeline, and he'd been thinking of me the entire time. Evangeline nodded and pushed up from her place at the counter. "Thanks for letting me sit in, Holly. It means a lot. Maybe we can work on something together one of these days."
"Sure,"
I replied automatically, my mind still locked on thoughts of Adam. Evangeline said goodnight and left the kitchen. Boots meowed sleepily from his cat bed in the corner, and I glanced up at the clock above the kitchen door. It was nearly midnight. With a start, I hurried to bottle the faded flirt, carefully labeling the set of vials, and finished clearing the kitchen. Time had a way of flying when I was working on potions, but I hadn't meant to go so long, especially not when I knew Adam was waiting for me to finish. I'd screwed up with him. Again. When I finished cleaning up, I pushed out to the formal sitting room off the kitchen and spotted Adam's socked feet propped up on the arm of the couch. Posey would murder him if she floated by and saw.
"Couches were for sitting, not lounging."
A smile twitched at my lips, and I opened my mouth about to comment when I heard his soft snoring. Adam was out cold. I covered him with the knitted blanket from the basket by the fireplace, and then went off to bed. Our talk would have to wait for another day. Chapter 5. The clock had barely crept past 6 a.m. when the door to Siren Song burst open, and Cassie came striding in, not wearing her usual work attire. Instead of jeans, a company t-shirt, and flats, she was decked out in a hot pink one-piece bathing suit, an electric blue sarong, and a floppy black hat. Once inside, she removed a pair of large shades and tucked one stem into the top of her suit, grinning at me as my mouth flopped open.
"I have a surprise for you," she said.
"Gee, my favorite words at 6 a.m. Cass, what's going on?" She giggled.
"We're taking the day off."
"We are?" The door opened behind her, and she stepped to the left as her younger sister, Kira, came inside. Her demeanor was the polar opposite of Cassie's, and I rushed to get her a huge cup of coffee. It was obviously a caffeine deprivation emergency. Kira grumbled something indiscernible as she took the cup from my hands and slouched over to lean against the counter. I turned my attention back to my colorful friend. "Seriously, Cass, what's going on? Did I miss a memo about Hula Day?" Cassie laughed.
"No, I'm serious, Holly. We've both been here all day, every day, for over a month. We need a little break, and I think a day at the beach is just what the doctor ordered. It's going to be in the mid-70s today. It's perfect."
"She's serious?" I asked, spinning around to look at Kira. Kira nodded.
"Would I be here at this indecent hour if she wasn't?"
She had a point. Kira and Cassie ran on completely opposite internal clocks.
"I just finished my last final yesterday. I was supposed to be poolside all day, but Cass said the tips would blow my mind, so here I am. Ta-da."
I sucked in my lower lip, stifling a laugh, and glanced back at Cassie.
"You're really okay with taking a day off?"
"More than okay. Now go home and get changed, and meet me back here, stat. I'll grab some goodies to take with us."
I gave her a mock salute and scrambled for the door. I needed to hurry back before she could find something to clean or organize. Luckily, everyone at the manor was still sleeping,
so I was able to slip in and out without disturbing anyone. Even Boots slept through my quick visit. Within 15 minutes, I was back at Siren Song, wearing a bathing suit under my denim shorts and a baggy t-shirt that I'd knotted in the front. The parking lot in front of the coffee shop held a few cars, and I knew the morning rush would pick up soon. The locals would be heading to work, and not too long after that, the early bird beachcombers would be up and ready for breakfast before heading to the shore. When I pushed back through the doors, Cassie was behind the counter making a drink, while Kira fielded the short line clustered around the register. I groaned and adjusted my bathing suit top. Great, now I get to work a shift in a bikini. Hey, maybe it would help with tips. I went to join my coworkers behind the counter, and the three of us got through the line within a few minutes. Kira's coffee had kicked in, and she was turning back into her normal, bubbly self. I got it, guys. Scoot! Cassie swept a glance over the shop. I could almost see her checking things off her mental list. I tugged at her arm, but stopped when the bell on the front door jingled and Nick walked into the shop. Cassie straightened, and a hand went to one of the two pigtail braids she had over her bared shoulders.
Morning, Nick.
I bit back a laugh and stepped to the register. Little early for you, isn't it? He smiled at the three of us.
Morning, ladies.
Cassie turned back to the espresso machine and went to work making Nick's standard order, a large mocha with extra chocolate sprinkles. Nick drummed his fingers on the counter and glanced around.
I'm actually here in a semi-official capacity.
Does that make your mocha tax deductible? I deadpanned. Nick chuckled and shrugged.
Something like that. Is Paisley in yet?
Not yet. She's probably at Thistle for the morning shift. She usually doesn't come here until the afternoon, I answered.
Oh, actually, she's coming in early today,
Cassie corrected, dumping a hearty spoonful of sprinkles on the whipped cream mountain peak atop Nick's drink.
Holly and I are going to the beach, she explained, handing over the drink.
Nice.
He glanced at each of us like suddenly our cruise ship attire made sense.
I don't know if Paisley told you, but her aunt hired me to locate her missing daughter, Katerina. Paisley said she'd bring some pictures with her today for me to use when asking around. Her aunt couldn't figure out how to work her fax machine or scanner.
He winced as though he'd personally tried to walk the woman through the process. Cassie nodded, and I wondered if she already knew about Paisley's cousin.
I told her to come in at 7, so...
She paused to look up at the clock.
Not too long.
Okay, great. Thanks, Cass.
Cassie's cheeks tinged pink, and I turned away to keep her from catching my grin. For her benefit, I shifted the conversation. What do you think happened? Paisley and I talked about it a little yesterday. How long has she been missing?
She's been gone for 2 weeks. No one has seen or heard from her. Or at least, no one that her mother can contact. From the sounds of it, things are a little tense between them. I'm not sure if the girl is just putting some space between them or if something really happened. Either way, I promised I would find out. Paisley's aunt is pretty hysterical about the whole thing.
Cassie sighed. That's so sad. Nick nodded. He looked like he might add something, but the bell on the front door chimed. It was Paisley. Her hair wasn't styled. Instead, it lay flat against her head, where it must have been pressed against the pillow while she slept. Her face was free of makeup, and her eyes were rimmed with red.
Paisley, are you all right?
Cassie's voice was thick with concern. Paisley nodded miserably.
I'm all right. I just didn't get a lot of sleep last night. I kept thinking about Katerina and the last conversation, well, argument that we had. What if something happened to her? I tried calling her half a dozen times last night, and every single time it went straight to voicemail.
We all turned to look at Nick, gauging his reaction. Unfortunately, he had an excellent poker face.
It'll be all right, Paisley. Don't get ahead of yourself.
Did you bring the pictures? She nodded and dug in her purse for an envelope. She slipped it open and produced a stack of 3 glossy pictures. We all crowded around as Nick fanned them out on the counter. Katerina looked to be in her early 20s, with blonde hair, brown eyes, and a wide smile. A dimple showed on each cheek.
"She's so pretty," Cassie said, reaching up to rub Paisley's shoulder.
She nodded, her expression distant, and I wondered if she'd even heard Cassie. She tore her eyes from the pictures of her cousin and pleaded with Nick.
"Please, Nick, you have to find her and bring her home."
He gave a solemn nod, pocketed the photos, and grabbed his mocha.
"I'll do everything I can. I'm headed to the office now, and I'll call as soon as I come up with something."
"Thank you, Nick,"
Paisley said, as the door swung shut behind him. Once Kara and Paisley were situated, Cassie and I made our getaway. I felt bad for leaving with such a dark cloud hanging over the two girls, but knowing them, they'd rally and be back to normal in no time. If anything, it was probably good for Paisley to have something to take her mind off the worst-case scenarios that were likely running through her head. Down by the ocean, a chilly wind bit into our skin, and we stopped at a large piece of driftwood to bundle into the sweatshirts we'd each packed in our tote bags. The sun was up, and the morning cloud cover was quickly burning off. We'd be stripping away the extra layers in no time.
"Gosh, this is nice," Cassie said, sighing contentedly as we started off down the beach, keeping about a foot between us and the edge of the tide.
I smiled over at my friend.
"Agreed. You needed a day off."
"You did, too,"
I laughed.
"I guess so. It has been a little crazy."
Cassie nodded and pulled a stray strand of hair off her lips as a sudden flurry of wind whipped it against her face.
"I guess we should have waited until later in the day. This isn't exactly bathing suit weather."
I shrugged. "It's not so bad.
Besides, this way we get the whole place to ourselves."
I pointed ahead of us at the mile or so stretch of untouched sand. "At least for a little while." Cassie nodded, and then tipped her head back to let the sun shine down on her face, completely defeating the purpose of her floppy sun hat. I smiled over at her, happy to see her relaxed for the first time in recent memory. "How are you holding up, anyway?"
"I'm good. I know you worry about me working too many hours, and I appreciate that, but actually, I'm really happy. There's something really cool about having a sense of ownership about the place. It's just nice. And the money's been great. Philip gave me a generous salary, mostly so he doesn't have to come back here. And with the extra tip money, I think my dad will be able to pay off some debt that we've been carrying around since, well, since his accident."
A swell of emotion bloomed in my chest, and tears pricked at the corners of my eyes, hidden behind my sunglasses. I wrapped an arm around Cassie's shoulders.
"I'm so happy for you, Cass. You're the most deserving person I know." "Thanks, Holly. I couldn't do it without you. I hope you're not planning on running away with Adam and leaving me all alone."
I dropped my head back and laughed.
"No, not at all."
"Good."
She flashed me a smile.
"Do you think Nick's planning to stay in town?"
I shrugged.
"I'd say so. He has a nice office, and every time I talk to him, he says business is good.
From what I know about him, he's a dedicated guy." A few seagulls flew overhead, circling the shore in search of breakfast. The sand was littered with shells and stones brought in with the tide. By the afternoon, they would all be gone, picked up by visitors or broken by kids and dogs running around. I breathed deeply of the salty air and realized how long it had been since I'd had a day off to relax and let my mind meander. Since the murder investigation, things had kicked into high gear, and I really hadn't had a chance to breathe. No wonder Adam was upset. As soon as we started dating, I'd gone MIA. We continued walking, each relishing the peaceful sounds of the ocean and sea life. I pushed thoughts of Adam to the back of my mind. Tonight, we'd get a chance to talk, and things could get back on track. For now, it was time to be with Cassie and enjoy a girl's day. And what would a girl's day be without some boy talk? My eyes slid over to Cassie, and I grinned.
You sure you don't want me to talk to Nick?
I'm sure, Cassie sighed. I mean, what if he's not interested? That could make things really awkward. In case you haven't noticed, it's hard to keep from running into people in this town.
I laughed.
Oh, believe me, I've noticed. If he wants to ask me out, he will. Besides, right now, I'm not sure when I'd have the time anyway. I'm at Siren Song 60-plus hours a week, and by the time I get home and get my dad something for dinner, I'm so zonked that most nights I fall asleep on the couch.
Cass, I said, worry pinching my voice. That's not good for you. I didn't realize you were going home and essentially working a second job.
My heart twisted. Her dad was disabled due to a work-related injury and needed help around the house, which was why Cassie and Kira still lived at home. They'd lost their mother years ago. They were all their dad had left. Cassie shrugged.
I guess I don't think of it that way. It's just life. I cook a bunch of meals at once and stash them in the freezer, so it's usually just warming things up and making sure he's okay. He can do most things for himself, but he appreciates a good meal, and I feel better knowing he's not living on takeout.
I nodded. Well, let me know if you ever want help cooking.
Thanks, Holly.
Ironically, I wasn't much of a cook. My potion-making skills didn't translate over to cooking or baking. But for Cassie, I would do my best if she needed help.
I'm actually looking into hiring a caregiver to stay with him during the day. Keep him company and maybe do a little cleaning.
That sounds good. She pointed out a large piece of driftwood poking out of the sand that was flattened on top from years of weathering.
This looks like a good place to park it.
We'd walked quite a way, and the clouds above us were now completely gone, leaving behind a crystal clear sky, and the sun was warming things up fast. I shrugged out of my sweatshirt and tucked it back into my beach bag. Cassie did the same, and then we each laid out a large towel. Cassie had brought water bottles and pastries from the coffee shop, so we got comfortable and snacked away. The hours flew by as we sat in the sand, getting some sun and not doing much of anything for once. When we decided it was lunchtime, we repacked our belongings and started back for town, plotting to go to the local pizza place and hit the buffet hard. Halfway back to where we'd entered the beach, Cassie's cell phone rang. She groaned when she glanced at the caller ID.
It's Kira.
She answered, and from what I could hear of the conversation, there was some kind of emergency with the espresso machine and they needed Cassie back at the shop to fix it. When she hung up, she looked like she was suddenly carrying 20 pounds across her shoulders.
Well, so much for a day off.
I frowned. I'm sorry, Cass. You want me to come with you? Magic wasn't always the best solution when it came to complicated mechanical problems, but if something was stuck or jammed, a little magic might just do the trick. Cassie shook her head.
No, not at all. Take the day, and I'll call as soon as I get things back together. We can meet up for an ice cream or something.
Even as she said it, we both knew there was no way she would be able to leave the shop. Once she got the espresso machine fixed, she'd hop right into working the afternoon rush, and it would be closing time in the blink of an eye. But I smiled and nodded like it was a real possibility.
Okay, Cass.
Good luck. I'll stop by later. She nodded, and then veered off, walking up the sand to a set of concrete steps that led to the shops and houses above the beach. The stairs weren't the closest ones to the coffee shop, but she'd move faster once on solid ground. I watched her scurry up and out of sight before I continued walking down the beach. Over the course of the morning, a trickle of visitors made their way down to the beach. As I walked, I observed. There were young families with children playing at the water's edge, and dogs were running up and down the beach, spraying sand in their wake as they raced to retrieve tennis balls and sticks. An elderly couple in matching track suits made their way over the sand, holding hands and talking to one another with comfortable smiles on their faces. I dragged in a deep breath and wondered where life would take me. Would I ever be one of the couples in beach chairs watching their little ones play in the ocean for the first time? Would I ever know what it was like to be in love and have someone by my side even when I was old and gray? It felt so far away, out of reach. But maybe.
Hello? Can someone help me? Please help!
I snapped around at the frantic shouts and spotted a young woman up on the hillside, jumping and waving her hands over her head. It took me a moment to wonder why no one else was responding to her. People walked down the stairs just feet away, but didn't look her way. The sun hit her arm at a certain angle, and I realized why no one could see her. She was a ghost. I hurried up the sand and stopped in front of her. "Hey," I said, keeping my voice low so as not to attract the attention of the other visitors. To them, it would look like I was talking to myself.
"Finally. Why are the people here so rude?"
She gave a miffed pout. I smiled over at a pair of tourists walking down the stairs and waited until they passed. I cast another glance over my shoulder, confirming we were at least 20 yards from the other beachgoers. When I was sure no one would hear me, I grabbed my cell phone from my pocket and held it to my ear, acting like I was talking on the phone while keeping my eyes trained on the ghost. "They can't see you, but I'm a witch and..."
"A witch?"
She took a step back as though afraid.
"What does that mean? Why do you have your cell phone out?"
I cringed. "Oh, Batwings. She doesn't know she's a ghost." The girl didn't wait for my answer. A barrage of questions flew from her lips.
"Can you tell me what happened? Why am I here? Why won't anyone help me? I've been screaming all morning, but no one has even noticed before you came along."
I held up my hands, slowing the monsoon of questions.
"Okay, hold on.
I'll explain everything, but not here. Come with me." She considered me for a long moment, as though not sure if she could trust me.
"Trust me, Cupcake, I can't hurt you. You're already dead."
As I waited for her to decide whether or not to follow me, I studied her face. There was something familiar about her. All at once, I was struck with a sudden realization, and I sucked in a sharp breath. I remembered where I'd seen the girl before. She was Katarina Barclay, Paisley's missing cousin. Chapter 6. My lips twitched downward as I watched the ghost in front of me. Finally, I ventured.
"Is your name Katarina?"
The girl's eyes went wide.
"Yes. How did you know that? Have we met?"
I shook my head. Before I could offer an explanation, another group of tourists made their way to the stairs that ran beside us.
"Please, come with me. I promise I'll help you."
Katarina nodded, and I dropped my cell phone into my tote bag. I waited for the tourists to pass and then ambled over to the stairs. They were much easier to climb than the hill, which was made of shifting sand and tall beach grass. Katarina followed me, and I wondered how she hadn't noticed that she wasn't touching the ground. She moved her legs as though she were still a human. Posey, my landlord at the manor, floated over the ground as though she was bound to the floor, but she didn't move her legs in a walking motion. As Katarina moved, she became more transparent, and I also wondered how she didn't notice that. Did ghosts see themselves as solid? I didn't have the answers, but I knew who would. The set of concrete steps took me to a side street that cut through a small, quiet neighborhood of quaint cottages and bungalows. Katarina started to ask questions again.
"You said you're a witch? What does that mean, like you practice Wicca?"
I gave her a polite smile. "No, I mean I'm a witch. I'm not human. And neither are you. At least, not anymore."
"What do you mean?"
She pursed her lips and gave me an indignant expression. I stopped walking and turned to face her. "Katarina, you're a ghost."
"A ghost?"
Katarina laughed.
"You're crazy. I'm going back to the beach to look for someone else who can help me figure out what's going on.
She turned away, making to leave and go back to the staircase. I dragged in a sigh.
I know it's hard to believe, but trust me, I know ghosts. I live with one, actually. Tell me, what's the last thing you remember?
At my question, she stopped, frozen in place. Her head started to shake, and then she whipped around. She held her arms up in front of her and stared at them.
A ghost?
I'm sorry.
Stars help me. Why wasn't there some kind of service for this? Shouldn't the SBA have agents to go out and help new ghosts acclimate?
It wasn't something I'd ever thought about before. I guess I always just assumed that ghosts woke up from death and knew that they were, well, dead.
Why can't I remember anything? I know my name, but that's it. I don't know anything else. It's like someone took an eraser to my brain and scrubbed it all away.
She ran her fingers through her hair, but they passed through without making contact. I gave her a pitying smile.
Come on. I know someone who can help you remember.
Katerina walked, floated, beside me as we wound through town. I didn't risk talking to her anymore, and she seemed to be too stunned to speak anyway. When I glanced over at her, she was still marveling at her arms and hands, not even paying attention to where she was walking. Not that it mattered. Anyone she encountered passed through her without incident. She walked right through a parking meter and didn't even flinch. Could she not see the obstacles? Or was she so distracted by what I'd told her that she didn't care? When we reached the manor, I walked her into the sitting room and told her to wait there. I doubled back to the grand staircase and took them two at a time to the upper level of the old house.
Posy,
I called, going for the latch that led to the attic. It was her favorite hangout.
Posy, can you come down, please? I need your help.
I jumped up to grab the latch and missed on my first attempt. I tried a second time and nabbed it. Behind me, a door flew open.
Do you mind?
An ice-cold voice hissed into the hallway. I squeezed my eyes closed for a moment.
Sorry, Lacey, I forgot you'd be asleep.
I craned around to look at Lacey, the resident vampiress, and winced at the harsh expression on her beautiful face. She snarled at me, her fangs on display.
Of course I'd be asleep. It's not even noon.
The next door down opened, and Adam appeared in the hallway, a black t-shirt pulled across his broad chest. Despite Lacey's icy glare, my heart warmed.
What's going on?
He asked, glancing between me and Lacey.
Your little girlfriend woke me up,
Lacey sneered. She hated that Adam and I were dating, although I had no idea why. For a little while, we'd all formed a truce, but it had disappeared quickly. Adam smiled at me.
Good going. You know how the Princess of the Night gets when she's dragged out of her bat cave too early.
Careful, fleabag!
Lacey flashed her fangs in his direction, but he just laughed her off. He smirked.
You're gonna have to try a little harder than that.
Guys, stop. Lacey, I'm sorry I woke you. I need to speak with Posy.
Lacey rolled her eyes and tossed her long bottle blonde hair over her shoulder.
And just what in the other world is so important?
I found a ghost on the beach. She's in the sitting room.
Lacey growled.
What? That mangy cat of yours isn't enough of a pet? You had to drag home a stray ghost now?
He's not mangy.
Magic pulsed along my palm, but I took in a deep breath and released it. She didn't know that she's a ghost, and now that she does, she has a lot of questions. Obviously. And I don't really feel equipped to explain it all to her. Adam chuckled and scratched at his jaw.
Holly, how do you always get yourself into these situations?
I sighed. I have no idea. He sauntered over toward me and wrapped an arm around my shoulders.
Come on, gorgeous. I think Posy's in the kitchen with Gwen.
Oh, that's actually perfect.
Gwen was another ghost. Two would be better than one. Adam guided me toward the stairs. and Lacey's door slammed shut as we hit the top step.
You know she's not going to let this go.
I know, I grumbled. In the kitchen, we found the two ghostly gal pals, as well as Boots, who was looking longingly between them and the cupboard where his food was stashed away. He didn't realize that neither of the women could actually feed him. I smiled as he raced over to me, complaining loudly about his predicament.
"Good afternoon, you two,"
Gwen said, smiling broadly as Adam and I walked into the kitchen.
"I understand congratulations are in order. Posey told me you're dating now. Not that I can say it was much of a surprise. The entire town has been buzzing about you two for months."
I cringed. "Super," Gwen laughed, her feather earrings swinging with her long-layered hair. She died in the 70s, after a tragic stage-diving incident, and would be forever immortalized as a flower child. She appeared to be in her early 20s, with sun-bleached hair, a dark tan, a line of freckles over the bridge of her nose, and a bright floral print romper that showed off her shapely, mile-long legs.
"There was actually a pool going for a while to see if you were going to go for our darling Adam or that handsome new PI in town."
I bit my tongue to keep from doling out a tart reply. Gwen was only the messenger, after all. Posey hovered beside Gwen, both of them looking as though they were actually sitting at the kitchen table. Gwen smiled up at me and Adam.
"I told Posey she should have you two move into the master suite, so she could rent out Holly's room."
Posey gave a distasteful look that exposed how she felt about this idea. Posey was old-fashioned, and for her, even having men and women under the same roof was a little outside the lines. My cheeks warmed at Gwen's suggestion, and I felt Adam shifting his weight uncomfortably from foot to foot.
"Ladies, listen, I need your help with something."
"What kind of help?" Gwen asked.
"I found a ghost on the beach. She was screaming for help."
She didn't know that she was dead, or a ghost, for that matter. I told her the truth, and I don't think she took it very well. "I was hoping you two could answer her questions and help her get situated."
"Oh, dear," Posey said, frowning. "Does she remember anything? Oftentimes new ghosts have memory loss."
"Her name," I sighed. "That's where things get sticky."
"What do you mean?"
Adam asked. "Well, I know her. At least I know of her. She's Paisley's cousin. Her aunt reported her missing, and Nick is working the case." Adam slapped a hand over his face.
"Gorgeous, really?"
"What?" He chuckled as he gave me a lopsided smile.
"Nothing. You just keep life interesting."
I frowned at him, and then glanced back at Posey and Gwen. "Can you help?" They rose in unison.
"Of course, dear," Posey answered. "Where is she?"
"The sitting room." The two ladies floated for the door, and Adam and I jumped apart to let them pass so they wouldn't run through us. The result was unpleasant, to say the least. Humans didn't notice it, but paranormals certainly did. It felt like doing a polar swim at the crack of dawn. Freezing and exhausting. A terrible combination. Once they passed, Adam and I followed them through the house to the sitting room.
"So, you're a new ghost," Gwen said, spreading her arms wide. "Miss Posey and I are here to teach you the basics of ghost life, and we'll make sure you transition effortlessly to your new life."
"Technically, your new afterlife," Posey added.
Adam shot me a look, and we both tried to suppress our laughter.
"They should teach seminars," he whispered.
I pressed a hand over my mouth to keep my giggles contained.
"So, dear, tell us, what do you remember?"
Katerina looked between the two ghosts, her eyes wide, like a deer caught in headlights.
I don't understand. What's happening?" she stammered.
She glanced past them and stared at Adam and me as we lurked in the doorway.
"What happened to me?"
I stepped into the room and stood off to the side of Posey and Gwen.
I don't know, Katerina. But you know my name. How do you know my name?
I work with your cousin, Paisley. We're both baristas at the local coffee shop. She got a call from your mother. She's worried about you.
Paisley? My mother?
Katerina pinched her eyes closed and violently shook her head.
I don't remember anything.
Her eyes popped open.
If I'm a ghost, then where's my body?
I sighed. I was hoping you could tell me. Posey raised a hand, drawing the attention back to her.
Dear, it's best not to struggle. The memories will come back to you. Sometimes it just takes a little while.
Katerina paced back and forth, kicking her silvery legs with each step. Her ghostly form was still clinging to her humanity.
I don't understand. How could I be dead? How could I have not known something like that? I was standing on that hill, screaming for help all day, until
she spun around to face me.
You came along to help me. I had no idea that no one else could see me. I thought maybe I was having a nightmare or something.
Posey nodded.
That's fairly common, dear. There is an adjustment process that takes place. Your body is gone, but your spirit will ease you into your new form. That's why you didn't realize you look different, or that you've likely been walking through solid objects. For a little while, your spirit will shield you from the changes. Otherwise, all ghosts would probably go mad.
Gwen nodded.
Same reason why your ghost form doesn't look like, well,
the condition of your physical body at the moment of death. You won't find ghosts wandering around with missing limbs, bullet holes, or gaping wounds. If I looked like my body, I would have a face more like one of those little pug dogs.
She mimicked, squishing her face.
I jumped off the stage at an outdoor music festival. Hit the pavement head first.
Katerina winced. I absently rubbed my nose, thinking of the impact.
So, you're saying that I'll remember?
Posey and Gwen nodded.
Eventually.
I glanced around the room. Posey, any idea on how long it will take? After all, Nick is looking for her as we speak. Posey shrugged.
There's no way to know, but I'll tell you what.
She turned back to Katerina.
Dear, you can stay here with us for as long as you need. There's plenty of room in the manor, and you'll be surrounded by friends.
My heart warmed at the relieved look on Katerina's face. Posey could be strict and uptight, but she had a kind soul, and her moments of sweetness melted me.
Thank you,
Katerina said, smiling for the first time.
And everyone that lives here is...
special?
Adam offered, grinning. I laughed.
That's a way of putting it.
This home is only for supernaturals. Supers, for short. Right now there's Posey, ghost, Lacey, vampirus, Adam, shifter, and as we've already established, I'm a witch. Adam cleared his throat.
Ollie.
What? He gave me a pointed look.
Aren't you missing someone?
I smacked myself in the forehead with the palm of my hand. Wow, yeah. Evangeline. She's a witch, too. Sorry, she's new.
Ish,
Adam added. I shot him a dirty look. Of course he would remind me that I'd forgotten her. Katerina cocked her head at Adam.
What's a shifter?
I turn into a dog,
he replied, unblinking. To him, it was the most natural thing in the world. Katerina's mouth dropped open for a moment, but she forced a smile.
Oh, that's nice.
I couldn't help but smile, even as I pitied the poor girl. It was quite a lot to take in over the course of an afternoon. Not only would she have to come to grips with the fact that she was no longer alive, but now she was being thrust into the entire supernatural world.
I'd grown up inside the Haven system, constantly surrounded by supers. In fact, I hadn't even met a human until after my 5th birthday. My parents had both worked inside the San Francisco Haven, and we never had the need to leave. When they decided I was old enough, they took me through the portal into the human world, and we explored the city as a little family of 3. My education on humans had been the mirror image of the experience for Katerina as she learned about supernaturals.
"Welcome to the manor," Posey said to Katerina.
Gwen pouted.
"No, I'm jealous. It's going to be like a ghost sleepover here every night."
"Oh, boy,"
Adam grumbled.
"Lacey's gonna love this."
Chapter 7. A couple of hours passed, but Katerina still had no idea who she really was, or what had caused her premature death. Posey and Gwen shooed me and Adam away. Gwen said my energy was aggressive and counterproductive to Katerina recalling her memories. Adam dragged me away before I could throw a fit, and we went outside for a walk. For the first few blocks, I fussed at being called aggressive, but Adam diffused the situation, and we walked for a while in silence. As we turned onto Zinnia, the main road through town, I pocketed my hands and looked up at Adam. "It's gotta be so weird to wake up and suddenly you're not alive anymore. And then you find out that all the creatures and beings from your childhood storybooks aren't just fairy tales and make-believe. What do you think that would be like?" He rubbed his jaw thoughtfully.
"I don't really know. Probably pretty scary. It's a good thing you found her. She could have spent the entire night just floating through town, trying to get someone's attention."
I shuddered. What a sad thought. "Are both of your parents shifters?" He nodded.
"Yeah. Mom's a rabbit, and my dad's a wolf."
I arched an eyebrow at him, and he laughed.
"I know. It's ironic."
"How does something like that even happen?" Adam chuckled.
"Well, they didn't meet in beast form. Thankfully, I probably wouldn't be sitting here if they had. They met at a grocery store, of all places."
He pointed ahead, and we took a left, veering off the main street and going down a side street that I knew led to Adam's favorite bakery. I smirked at his choice, but followed his direction. "So she was shopping for carrots, he for steak, and they thought they should get together for dinner?" Adam laughed.
"Something like that."
"And they're still together?"
"Yeah, 30-something years."
"Wow." I turned it over in my mind, suddenly wondering if that was what Adam imagined for his own life. A long marriage and a quiet life inside the Haven system. Considering the fact that he was walking beside me in our tiny little town 3 hours away from the nearest Haven, I doubted it. But then what did he want? "When did you first learn to shift?"
I guess I was 4 or 5. It was right before Academy started. When I was that age, I didn't shift into the form you've seen. It takes a few years to settle in your form. Those initial shifts were to smaller creatures. Rabbits, badgers, even a bird one time. That was fun.
I smiled as Adam took me on a tour through his memories. It wasn't something we normally talked about, but it made me want to get lost inside of his mind and relive those days through his eyes. Adam was a handful as an adult. I could only imagine the antics he'd gotten into during his youth. His poor parents. We were light years away from even considering the possibility, but if things continued and we ended up getting married, I wondered if our children would be half shifters and half witches or wizards, or if they would settle on one or the other. I couldn't imagine a mini Adam that had access to blasting and stunning spells. We'd need to buy a fortress or a castle to live in. There were some things that homeowners insurance just wouldn't cover. I smiled at the thought, but quickly tucked it away in the very back of my mind. We stopped in front of the bakery, and I laughed.
"You're getting predictable."
Adam held the bubblegum pink door open and ushered me forward.
"Come on, like you don't want something."
I scurried into the shop, not wanting to miss out. Matilda and Penny, A sweet lady and her grown daughter ran the shop. The bakery was decorated with soft pink and ivory tones and had an old-fashioned feeling to it. My favorite part was the smell. The flour and sugar and chocolate all melded together and filled the space with air that felt like it should be edible.
"Afternoon, Adam," Penny said, popping up from her seat behind the counter.
Penny straightened her cinnamon-colored ponytail and adjusted the eggplant frames of her glasses.
"Holly, it's nice to see you."
I automatically smiled, though it was sometimes still unnerving that people knew me everywhere I went. Even though I'd been living in Beechwood Harbor for 7, almost 8, months, I was just starting to get used to the familiarity of life in a small town. And after cracking Peg's murder investigation nearly single-handedly, I was even more notorious. Apparently, according to Gwen, my love life was a hot topic, too. Adam leaned over the case, carefully considering the array of sugary treats, even though all three of us knew he'd end up walking out with a box that contained one of each item listed on the chalkboard menu above the register. Penny watched him, a faraway, dazed look in her eyes. I smirked to myself. Adam had a fan club wherever he went. How he'd managed to be a notorious flirt and yet not make anyone angry at him was beyond me. Usually, shameless flirts had a following of jilted exes on their tail. But not Adam. Everyone loved him. Well, except for Lacey. As I watched Penny stare at Adam, I was struck by the irony that if it was Evangeline in her place, I wouldn't be nearly so cool-headed about the attention. What was it about her that got me so riled up? The answer came to me half a heartbeat later, and I sighed. Was I really that shallow? Was it just because she was so perfect? Adam straightened and flashed a grin over the top of the display case.
Lucky Penny, I think I'm going to have to do my usual and order one of everything. I can't decide.
Penny giggled and went to retrieve a large bubblegum pink box.
I had a feeling.
I laughed and rested a hand on Adam's arm.
What did I say? Predictable.
He planted a peck on my cheek while we waited for Penny to load up the box of goodies. When she was done, she passed the box over the counter and Adam fished out his wallet to pay. Once we left the bakery, Adam started on the road that would lead back to the manor.
I still have some work to do, but you can hover over my shoulder if you want, he offered.
Adam did freelance tech support for a couple software companies. Sometimes he had to go into Seattle for work, but most of his daily routine could be done remotely. He occupied the master suite at the manor, and half of the large space was dedicated to his desk, multiple computers, and other techie gadgets that I didn't know the names of. Technology and I had never really gotten along. I preferred magic. Magic was simple. I would, but I'll have to take a rain check. I promised Cassie that I'd stop in at the shop. She was having issues with the espresso machine. Besides, if I go back now, I'll just get another lecture from the ghost whisperers. Adam smirked.
All right.
We came to a stop at the intersection, and I reached over with a wide grin to grab for the bakery box. Before I go... Minutes later, with a bear claw in hand, I pushed into siren song. When I stepped inside the air-conditioned coffee shop, the sweet smell of freshly pulled espresso shots hit me in the face. Cassie had the defunct machine back up and running, which was good news since I desperately needed a caffeine hit. I got in line behind three other patrons and scanned the shop while I nibbled on the pastry in my hand. As usual, every table was occupied. Most people were there in small groups, talking and laughing over steaming cups of coffee, fresh muffins, and the other goodies we stocked, most of which came directly from the bakery that Adam and I'd just left. However, Siren Song didn't sell their bear claws, and they were a particular weakness of mine. They were almost as good as a fresh lemon cloud from the Seattle Haven. Behind the counter, Kira and Cassie were taking turns working the espresso machine, while Paisley manned the cash register. A pang shot through me as I stared at Paisley. She was smiling at the woman on the other side of the register, waiting for her to produce the exact change for her order.
but I noticed a hint of sadness in her eyes. Was she worrying about her cousin? My stomach twisted at my next thought. Katerina wasn't coming back. Paisley would never see her again. Hadn't she also said that their last conversation had been a heated argument? My heart broke for her. I knew what that kind of loss felt like. I knew the only way I could help Paisley and the rest of her family was to get them some closure over what happened to Katerina. But that was a lot easier said than done. How could they find closure when they didn't even know that she had passed away? With Nick investigating her disappearance, it would probably be best to have him find out what happened and then break the news to the family. But he didn't know he was looking for a body. It's not like I could walk up to him and say something like, "Hey, you know that girl you're looking for? I can't tell you how I know this, but she's dead now." Nick had no idea I was a witch, and while he was open to the paranormal and considered paranormal investigations a secondary career, I wasn't sure how I could explain that I'd met Katerina's ghost without opening a Pandora's box. So, the next best option would be to lead Nick to Katerina's body. But how could I do that when even Katerina didn't know where it was? At the moment, she couldn't remember anything that would help lead me to her body. So it was up to me to figure out the places she would most likely be, then work from there. Once I found her remains, I would hand the investigation over to Nick.
"Holly!"
Paisley called out, snapping me back to attention. I'd gotten so wrapped up in thinking about Katerina and the investigation that I hadn't realized the three people in line ahead of me had been served. I stumbled forward.
"Sorry about that. You okay? You looked pretty lost there for a minute."
"I'm good. I came by to make sure you guys were okay. But it looks like Cassie already got the machine back up." Paisley smiled.
"Yeah, she's a whiz. What can I get you?"
"A large black coffee. I think my cup's under the cupboard over there," I said, pointing at a tall, narrow set of cupboards between the front of the shop and the back. The staff used it for holding personal belongings while on the clock.
"Got it."
Paisley went over to the cupboard, grabbed my travel mug, and filled it from the carafe. She popped the lid in place and handed it over.
"Put it on your tab?"
I laughed.
"Sure."
With the employee discount, it came out to less than a buck. Paisley marked it down.
"Hey, Holly."
Cassie came over, and I noticed her bathing suit strap peeking out from the large scoop neck t-shirt she'd slipped on. The shirt looked like it was two sizes too big. She glanced down and tucked the strap away.
"It was the best I could find. I think they were old tees left over from before we changed the logo a couple of years ago."
I frowned at her.
"Cass, you should go home and shower and change. I can stay here if you need extra hands."
Paisley laughed.
"Good luck, Holly. I've been trying to tell her that since she got here."
Cassie rolled her eyes.
"I'm fine. I'll go home as soon as it dies down a little."
I made a pointed glance behind me, silently highlighting the fact that there was no longer a line. The dining area and patio were still full, but all needs had been met, and there was no way Kira, Paisley, and I couldn't hold down the fort for the rest of the shift. Paisley laughed under her breath and turned away to go clean down the machine and wipe the counters.
All right,"
Cassie said, throwing up her hands in surrender.
"Holly, you don't have to stay if you don't want to."
"I don't mind. There are only a few hours left till closing anyway." Kira came up to the front, carrying two bottles of flavored syrup, one in each hand. I noticed one was peppermint and winced. I still wasn't over that smell. But most of the residents in Beechwood Harbor didn't know that a bottle of peppermint syrup had been the murder weapon in Peg Holloway's death. They were just as hooked on the stuff as ever.
"You trying to kick her out?" she asked, glancing at me with a quirked smile.
"Yes. Help, please." Kira laughed and placed the two bottles on the counter.
"Sis, I love ya, but get out of here."
Cassie groaned and tugged her apron strings loose.
I'm going.
"It's a miracle," Kira said,
raising her hands to the sky. I stifled another laugh by stuffing the last bite of bear claw into my mouth.
When it was down, I brushed my fingertips off on my jean shorts and went for my own apron, which I pulled on and tied loosely.